If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
Let's go!
This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
And we are back, Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Got to bring in my producer, Sean Mapes. And hey, let's talk some NFL in Week 14, specifically about the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, do they still want to sign Odell? I mean, there's been some concerns after his physical. I mean, could he truly improve the Cowboys right here, right now?
No, not right here, right now, based off the reports that he might not be ready until January, mid-January. Even then, you're looking at maybe he's in there for the wild card round or divisional round. And to sign him hoping that you're getting two win-or-go-home games out of him, that's you're asking quite a bit out of someone coming off an ACL injury to kind of parachute in and play in these high-intensity games, no warm-up, no, you know, preseason, no game against the Texans. He has to go in there, and he's going to have to play Tampa Bay or Philadelphia or some real teams out there. So I think asking him to come in and help, he probably can help a little bit. He's probably better than whoever their last wide receiver on their depth chart is right now. But he's not coming in to save the season.
The Dallas Cowboys, they are 9-3. Sean, you and I were talking earlier. The Texans at the Cowboys, the Cowboys are the largest favorites of any game this season. I mean, that is crazy. Yeah. I feel so bad for Lovie Smith. Like, what happened?
Exactly. None of this is really Lovie Smith's fault. The problems with the Texans were long before Lovie Smith got here, and hopefully they're not long after he is dismissed or leaves on his own accord. But yeah, it's really tough. He has to go up there, and he's changing quarterbacks from Davis Mills to Kyle Allen. He has to explain why, and he can't just go, I don't know, they're both not that good. We're just trying different versions of not that good. But yeah, going up against the Cowboys with a 17-point spread, I mean, this is like a Georgia versus, I don't know, Vanderbilt kind of spread where it's over two touchdowns in the NFL. That's crazy. But
quick question, the Cowboys offense, is it good enough to win a Super Bowl this year?
I think it is. I think with Tony Pollard really kind of taking the reins as the first running back on that team, if they kind of lean more on Pollard, ask Dak to make more plays just in pass play action and isn't really, really.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, we are back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, the fastest 2 hours in radio. Join us every Saturday afternoon, 1 to 3 Eastern, and we'd love to hear from our audience at E Radio Sports. You can always email the show, info@eradiosports.com, and download our app, Sports Map Radio, if you miss any of our interviews, podcastarena.com. We've had you covered. We're week 14 in the NFL, also getting you ready for the college football playoff semifinals, Georgia, Ohio State, and Michigan, TCU. It's going to be a lot of fun, but right now we're going to do a hard crossover, and we're going to power down and take time for a book review. It was one of my favorite features in the fall, and we got to have him back, and we are so delighted to be visiting with Kevin Bryant, author of Spies on the Sidelines, the high-stakes world of NFL espionage. Hello, Kevin. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me back on.
We're thrilled to have you back on, and it's a fascinating read that explores the extraordinary just NFL teams that are willing to do all kinds of things to in order to win. So pull back the curtain. Take us back to what was the inspiration of this book, because your background is actually, I mean, you're an Army veteran with over 20 years experience safeguarding and gathering information for the Department of Defense. You don't have an NFL background. How'd this all come about?
Right. So as you said, you know, I mean, I've got the background with, you know, collecting and protecting information for the Department of Defense.
Right.
I've got a master's degree in sports management and another one in intelligence studies. And my bachelor's degree is in history. So, you know, when everything went on with the Patriots, you know, with Spygate and then with Josh McDaniels going to the Broncos and then you know, they being caught recording a walkthrough practice of the 49ers. At that point, I just really got curious how much of the spying stuff goes on in the NFL and did a bunch of research, realized no one had written a book on it. And I felt that, you know what, with my background, obviously it'd be great if I had worked in the NFL, but if you're going to work in the NFL, then you don't have the experience collecting and protecting information. So I said, you know what, I'm as well suited as anybody to write this book. And being an NFL fan all my life, I picked it up and ran with it.
We are shining the spotlight on his brand new book, Spies on the Sidelines, the high-stake world of NFL espionage. Kevin Bryant is our very special guest. So what are you saying, Kevin? There's a dark side to the NFL? Come on.
Well, you know, there is a dark side, but it's not just about the dark side. So what I try to go into in the book is all of the various means that teams use to gather information on their opponents. So it goes into everything from the permissible techniques that the NFL is well aware of and that everybody uses and that are fully sanctioned to, you know, the controversial techniques such as reading lips of, you know, coaches and coordinators that are calling in plays, to things that are just flat out not permitted, that are illicit, that break NFL rules or bylaws, such as trying to put a spy in another organization or headset tampering, actually being able to listen in to what another team is saying in their headsets, or at least to interfere with the signals so that they can't properly communicate between coaches and players.
You know, I was going to ask you, what are some of the methods and measures that teams take in order to win? But one example is what Mike Shanahan using Navy SEALs to secure a practice field before the, 98 Super Bowl? Is that right?
Right. So, you know, and that's one of the things the book is about. It is not just the means that the teams use to gather gather the information, like I just discussed, but also what are the countermeasures that are employed to defend against the collection that is done. So I think, yeah, the 88 example, before that Super Bowl where the Broncos were about to play, Packers in a Super Bowl. So before, you know, any big game, having another team spying on your practices is always a concern, and particularly so before the Super Bowl, right? Because one, no game is bigger, right? You're willing to do just about anything you can to get that win. And then two, you've got 2 weeks to prepare for that game. And that gives you that extra time to be able to try to pull off some of these shenanigans, such as watching what the other team is preparing for you. And so this was a big concern for Mike Shanahan heading into the game. And the Super Bowl was going to be held in San Diego, which is where his team is practicing. But his big concern is there is this hill that overlooks the practice field where they are. And he's not happy with it. He's like, man, you know, Packers could use this easily as a location to be able to spy on the practices. So what he does is, you know, San Diego, home to a lot of Navy and Marines. So he sets up a plan. You know what? We're going to hire 18 Navy SEALs to actually secure this practice field. To secure, rather, the hill overlooking the practice field.
Uh-huh.
And that's what he did. And everything was just going great until, you know, Pat Bowlen, who was the owner of the Broncos, revealed a news helicopter flew over. And, you know, and here's a quote. Is it, Mike went crazy. I think he expected one of these guys to shoot a SAM missile at it and knock it out of the air. You know, And that's just how paranoid coaches are. They're trying to protect their information.
And direct all of our listeners where they can go and get a copy of the book. It is titled Spies on the Sidelines, The High-Stake World of NFL Espionage.
Yeah, so it's available on Amazon or all of the major online book retailers, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Walmart. You can grab it there. If you want to see the full range of options available, you can go to my website, which is spiesonthesidelines.com. And the book is selling in hardbound, audiobook, and ebook format.
You know, your book, it really makes you think about just how much of an impact spying has had on the NFL, not just today, but in years past, and perhaps just how much it has impacted results and outcome.
Yeah, it's had a major impact. So what I saw through my research writing this book is that a lot of the coaches that have big, big names throughout the NFL's history have been the ones to employ, frankly, illicit collection techniques, meaning they're not permitted. They're breaking NFL rules and policies. And it goes all the way back to George Halas, who is considered, one of the founders of the NFL as the owner and first coach of the Chicago Bears, to Sid Gilman with the Chargers, Weave Eubank with the Jets and the Colts, Al Davis with the Raiders, and obviously, today we've got Bill Belichick with the Patriots.
So give us one of your favorite NFL spying history moments. You got one that's a bit intriguing?
Sure. Yeah, so I'll give you one. So this is from back in good old Al Davis days, and it was the opening night game of the 1994 season. And so the Raiders are about to play the 49ers, and the 49ers just have an absolutely stacked team. You've got Steve Young at quarterback. You've got Jerry Rice as your wide receiver. Ricky Waters at running back. You got Deion Sanders at cornerback. And the 49ers are just rolling over teams during this dynasty period of theirs. And so the Raiders have a good team, but it's nowhere, near the same quality as the 49ers. So what happens before the game is Al Davis ends up wandering over to the 49ers side of the field during warm-up.
Uh-huh.
And he's just lingering about, and this does not sit well with the 49ers offense. And so, they're like, what's he doing? Is he spying? Is he trying to listen to our, the plays that we're calling out? And so they come over to the sideline where their offensive coordinator, Mike Shanahan, is at, and they complain to him. And Mike goes, hey, don't worry about all this, guys. We're going to win the game no matter what. But Shanahan's also concerned. And so he pulls Steve Young aside, his quarterback, and tells him, hey, Steve, what I want you to do is throw a go route. And if you happen to hit that guy in white, who is Al Davis, right, I'm not going to be mad at you. So Steve Young goes back on the field. He does exactly what Coach Shanahan tells him to do.
No.
And Jerry Rice is the wide receiver for this route. He's not in on this, right? So he goes to run his route, and he's quickly barreling down on Al Davis. And it looks for a moment like they're all going to collide. The football that's being thrown by Steve Young, Jerry Rice, and Al Davis about to go down in a big pile. At the last minute, Al Davis sees it all coming and just falls flat on the ground to avoid Jerry Rice going over the top of him. The football, unfortunately, actually pelts Davis while he's laying on the ground.
Wow.
And, Coach Shanahan and the 49ers offense just thinks this whole thing is hilarious. And they break out laughing. Al Davis dusts himself off, gets off the ground, and issues the one-finger salute over to Coach Shanahan. And everyone, moves on, and it's no big deal. But, it just goes to show that, there are a lot of different countermeasures teams use to defend their information. But I thought, actually throwing a football at a coach has to be one of the farthest extremes that any team has ever gone to.
Absolutely. Spies on the Sideline, spiesonthesidelines.com, the high-stakes world of NFL espionage. Author Kevin Bryant has been our very special guest. Listen, perfect stocking stuffer. It's not too late. You can go anywhere online and get a copy of that. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. We look forward to connecting with you again real soon. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way here at Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
You bet. We are back. Hour two, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Here in our next segment, World Cup Review. Coverage will continue, and it's certainly been fascinating to watch. The United States, they were knocked out last week by the Netherlands, 3-1 loss in that round of 16. But I take away so many positives from Team USA's performance, and so there's a lot of storylines we're going to dissect, and we're going to open up our phone line, and so thrilled to have with us and joining us for the very first time from The Athletic. He does an amazing job, and that is Chris Camerani. Good afternoon, Chris.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. Muscling through a little bit of a cold, so you got to help me out here. And we want to hear all your takeaways from the United States performance. It certainly was a big highlight last Tuesday when they won over Iran.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to look at this through the whole scope of what the last 5 years have been like when you're talking about a men's American soccer. The fact that 5 years ago, the men failed to qualify for the 2018 World Cup, and just how brutal that was, and what a setback it was for so many young players in this sport, in this country. And then fast forward, you know, 4.5 years later, they are getting out of the group stage in a decently difficult group and advancing to the knockout stage. It was everything that this young team should have accomplished. I know a lot of fans are frustrated that the Netherlands match wasn't as competitive as they would have liked. I just think looking at the whole, considering how young this team is, this was the youngest starting lineup in Qatar out of all 32 teams that were there. You can look at this through the lens of what this means for the next World Cup in the U.S., Mexico, and Canada in 2026. It takes a very long time to build a program into getting to this point where you can make runs to the quarterfinals, semifinals. And the U.S., I think a lot of people believe, have kind of the exoskeleton, so to speak, to do that. But you have to go through some growing pains, and this young group did. But I think you have to look at this World Cup as an overall success. But the true measuring stick will be 4 years from now, and I think everybody is already excited and turning the page to what they can potentially do when the next World Cup is on home soil.
You know, Chris, you mentioned that the USA and the men failed to qualify for the last World Cup, and they've been working very diligently, over the past 4 years. What changed? What did they do different in their approach?
They embraced a youth movement that was sorely lacking for a long time. I mean, what we saw during the 2018 World Cup qualifying cycle was the kind of the dying embers of a pseudo-golden generation that was able to reach new heights in 2010 and 2014, but it was an old team. It was a team that didn't have enough youth and vitality in it. And what this new, you know, project that was undertaken by Greg Berhalter and his staff, it was highlighted by bringing in a bunch of young, unproven players throughout the last 4 years and basically giving them kind of a platform to figure out how they can play together. And there were so many questions going into this World Cup about how this young team could, you know, be a cohesive unit on the world stage. And I think you can say, as I mentioned earlier, they reached, you know, logical expectations. And it's something that the U.S. men's team hasn't really featured in a very long time. And that's just such a young, unproven team at a World Cup. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier as well, this is something that I think can springboard them forward. And, you know, the fact that you have so many young players either in their, you know, late teens or early to mid-20s, you know, you reach your soccer kind of apex in your later 20s. That's when most, you know, prime players are playing at the best of their abilities. And you look at what this team makeup is at the moment, you're just going to have so many players like that are currently playing in Europe reaching that point 4 years from now.
The Athletic's Chris Camerani is with us at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, here in Hour 2. And certainly soccer, Chris, is you know, viewed as perhaps what the most popular sport in the world. And I just have to wonder, help me understand and our listeners, you know, why has the United States, why have we not been leaders?
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question that so many, you know, soccer fans in this country have been dying to figure out for a long time. I mean, I think if you look at it on the surface, just from a cultural perspective, there are just too many other cooks in the kitchen when it comes to different sports to get involved with in this country, whereas pretty much everywhere else around the world, it's primarily soccer or maybe secondarily baseball in some places and maybe basketball as well. We've just taken, you know, quite a bit longer in order to throw the amount of necessary resources into the men's game. The women's game, as you know, has been thriving for a while, and we've been the best, women's national team for several decades running. But the men's side has taken some time, and I think a lot of people who are looking at this thing through like a glass half full prism believe that this is kind of just the beginning in terms of being able to spark a wildfire of sorts in terms of getting more young athletes to get involved, and not only get involved, but look at it from a perspective of trying to play professionally at such a younger age. I think we fall in love in this country with the idea of, you know, you go to high school, you try to get a college scholarship somewhere in whatever sport you want to do, and then, you know, the idea of going pro is very far-fetched, and it's still very far-fetched in soccer, but the reality is there are so many avenues now in America or overseas that young players can take advantage of in terms of pursuing their dreams. And so many of these players on this year's World Cup team were kids that left home at 15, 16 years old and moved to Germany or Italy or England and decided to kind of throw themselves into the deep end and learn how to play soccer at a professional level at the highest level. And it paid dividends quite immensely.
So let's look ahead. I mean, how good can the United States be by 2026 when we talk about World Cup, and who's going to coach them?
Yeah, that's another million-dollar question. Is that, you know, we've seen some reports that Greg Berhalter is, you know, potentially already in renegotiating his, you know, return to the men's national team. But historically, national team coaches don't tend to fare all that well when they have a second cycle. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. In terms of their ceiling in 2026, so much of it depends on how these young star players continue to play and star at their various club levels in Europe. I mean, we look at this team, and the stars of this team are playing at some of the biggest clubs in Europe. They're playing the best players in the world on a week-in and week-out basis. I think, in my opinion, it's about adding on to that and finding, you know, when Christian Pulisic is 27 or 28 in 2026, like, who's going to be the 17, 18, 19-year-old who is knocking at the door and trying to either, you know, play alongside him or potentially supplant him. That's what the other best countries in the world are doing every World Cup cycle. So the ceiling for this team, I think, is definitely going to be beyond the round of 16 in 2026. But so much of that is, you know, it depends on the continued amount of the addition to this youth movement that U.S. soccer has undertaken.
World Cup coverage with Chris Camerani from The Athletic, and our time is winding down. And, you know, the World Cup, it's a global event. Just kind of take us through the process. I mean, how do teams qualify?
Yeah, so there are various federations all over the world, whether you're in Europe or South America, North America, Asia. Generally, the 4 to 8 best teams in various federations all across the world qualify. So for us, you know, over in North America, we're called CONCACAF is the federation. And you looked at the teams that qualified, U.S., Mexico, and Costa Rica, and Canada as well. So that's just kind of you go through a World Cup qualifying cycle where you play a bunch of matches for 2.5 years. Uh-huh. And it doesn't have the same intensity of a World Cup, but you're also playing for your potential World Cup lives every time you get the national team together, you know, 2 or 3 times a year. So I think a lot of fans are eagerly looking forward to this next cycle to see what this group can put together, because as we saw with failing to qualify in 2018, qualifying nowadays is no guarantee, because even in North America, so many of the other countries that were usually chasing us in Mexico have really stepped up their game and are now kind of regional powerhouses.
Has the United States, have they ever won a World Cup?
The men have never won a World Cup. The women have won several World Cups.
They have.
But the men have never made it past the quarterfinals. Their best finish was in 2002 in Korea when they had kind of a dream run with a similarly young team. But obviously this group wasn't able to get there. But I think that's why so many people have 2026 circled as, you know, maybe that can be new ground that's broken by U.S. men's national team.
Well, it'll be fascinating to watch just how this young team, this core, how they develop over the next few years and if they'll be ready in 2026. Hey, check them out, The Athletic, and that is Chris Camerani, first time on the show. Thank you so much for joining us, Chris, this weekend.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way at Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
You bet. It is time to roll up our sleeves. We're going to get to work and talk some PGA news and notes. Indeed, it is a big weekend as the seventh edition of the match and four FedEx Cup champions will be in Florida. In fact, they're already there for the primetime golf tonight that will get underway at 6 o'clock Eastern at the Pelican Golf Club. You bet the match, it is back. Tiger, Rory, Jordan, and JT. Here to provide his expert analysis is former PGA Tour player, and that is Larry Miller. How are you, Larry? I know in Louisiana, here in Texas, we are totally taking in and enjoying this 80-degree weather.
Yeah, I know. It's bizarre. It's almost like winter got eliminated this year. But yeah, it's the same here in New Orleans. It's just like looks like summertime. And you know, it was 83 yesterday, and play golf in shorts, and it was still hot. So yeah. It's kind of weird, but we'll take it.
Absolutely. Well, listen, let's get the preview tonight for the match. It is back, and a full disclosure for our audience. I mean, Larry, you're a traditionalist. You've never been a big fan of this exhibition, but I actually find this one a bit intriguing. So what say you? I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Well, yeah, you know how I feel about these things. You know, to me, it's just an exhibition, and I like serious golf, real golf, where there's pressure on the players and consequences, you know, but it's a fun thing. And you're right, this one does have a little extra intrigue. I mean, you've got Jordan and JT, you know, who are just close friends and super partners together, and it's fun to watch them, you know, their relationship on the golf course, how it works. And aside from the fact that they're two of the best players in the world, and then you've got Rory, who is probably the best player in the world in my opinion. And then the mystery man, Tiger Woods, you know, who he says he can hit every shot that he needs to hit. He just can't walk.
Yeah.
And we saw that last year, you know, with his attempts to play in those tournaments. And he would fatigue, you know, in the final round or so, or two rounds. So, you know, the intrigue is how is Tiger going to perform? And how's that going to stack up against JT and Jordan? I think it is intriguing. And even though it's not serious golf, you know, it's still going to be interesting. And I think it's going to be, you know, I think we're going to see some unbelievable golf shots in this thing. And that's the fun of it, is to see the best players in the world hit great shots. I don't put much stock in the match or the results of the match, but just watching these four play, that's a treat.
Hey, we are so glad you're with us on this Saturday afternoon at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Love to hear from you. Chime in on the conversation at eRadio Sports Info at eRadioSports.com and Podcast Arena. We always want to encourage you to download our app. You can take us anywhere, anytime. And we're breaking it all down, getting you ready for the match tonight, the level of excitement. It is up because Tiger will be out there playing. And I have to tell you, we're talking about how intriguing this is, but I actually find it surprising that he is playing, Larry, despite, you know, his latest health-related setback. I mean, he didn't play last week due to that plantar fasciitis in his right foot. So I just have to wonder, you know, how's he going to look? They're only playing 12 holes, and the format is best ball, but we'll have to just kind of wait and see how it goes tonight for him.
Yeah, and I expect him to be able to hit the shots, hit great shots. He said himself that he could hit every shot that you can ask him to hit. He just can't walk. So I think we're going to be treated to him hitting great golf shots. Rory's, you know, awesome display of power and that golf swing, just the best golf swing that I've ever seen, I think. And its effectiveness has been proven with his performance. And so, you know, and like I said, how's that going to stack up against these two young guns who are arguably, you know, in the top five in the world also? So, yeah, it'll be fun to watch. And I think it has more allure to it than most of those exhibitions because, you know, when you get the football players in there, then that really, you know, to me, that kind of brings the interest level down for me anyway. I don't need to see football players play golf. I want to see them play football.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And so the coverage, of course, tonight, it will get underway at 6 o'clock Eastern on TNT. And I think one of the things, it is an exhibition, but what you have to just love and appreciate about it is that all four of these golfers will make a series of donations to the hurricane Ian relief efforts after the devastating effects late in September. And just the communities. And that really is, you know this well, Larry, the PGA Tour, they pride themselves on giving back to community, especially when events like this are being held.
Yeah, they've got a long tradition of doing that, of helping out and helping communities and raising money for charity. And that's probably the best thing about this whole idea of these matches is the good that it does for people who need it.
Well, tell us about the Pelican Golf Club in Florida, which incidentally hosted the LPGA Pelican Women's Championship for the past 3 years. I'm just wondering, have you or Connie, your wife Connie, have you guys ever played it?
You know, we have never played that course. Heard a lot about it. You know, I really don't know much about it except that it's a fabulous golf course and place. But we haven't played it, so we've got to put that on the bucket list. But we'll get to see kind of what it looks like tonight and on the match. You know, it'll probably whet the appetites of people out there wanting to get out there and play. I don't know how hard it is to get on that golf course or how private it is, but I have heard that's pretty spectacular.
Well, and from what I've read, the course was originally designed by Donald Ross in 1925, and it was recently restored in 2019, and that it's quite forgiving off the tee, but it has small undulating greens. So, you know, you're going to feel good about your tee shot, but it's going to make you work a little bit when you get on the green.
Well, if Tiger Woods is, in fact, able to hit the shots like he's talking about, I think we're going to see. You know, he's been long known as the best iron player that's ever played the game. You know, Greg Norman was pretty much called the best driver ever. But Woods is just hands down the best iron player ever. And so if he is able to hit those shots, and since the greens are small, you know, we might see some really great shots going into those small greens. And, you know, it's funny, the Donald Ross refurbishing or redesign, whatever you want to call it, that's going on a lot around the country where they are restoring some of these courses to their original design. And I think that's pretty interesting and because it's kind of like a step back. And I also think, you know, if they do dial the ball back, like there's a lot of talk that that's going to happen, then that's going to make these old original golf courses more enjoyable because you won't be hitting 350-yard tee shots and making the course kind of obsolete. So that's interesting that they are doing this around the country. I hear it all the time that these courses are being brought back, you know, to the original shape.
What do you think the inspiration is? What are they trying to recapture from courses that were built in the 20s?
Well, I think they're realizing how great these layouts were, these original designs.
Okay.
And it's the lay of the land. You know, it's just using the natural terrain. That's what the great designers and architects did back then, is they just used the features of the land to design and build these courses. And they didn't have all these artificial, you know, the mounding and the things that they push dirt around to create. And I like that. And that's what's so great about golf over in Scotland and Ireland, is that you get to play against the land, against the terrain, the way it lies. And then you just put tees and greens and a few bunkers in there. But I like that. I'm glad to see that happening. But they're going to have to dial the ball back, or else, you know, those courses are going to be too too easy for the modern players.
You are listening to the familiar voice, former PGA pro, author of 5 books on golf and performance. Also, check out his website for instruction at LarryMillerGolf.com. I'll tell you what, some exciting news this week. Will Zalatoris, he is going to, the calendar's marked. He's going to return to action after his, back injury. He will be in play in the month of January, the Century Tournament of Champions. So what are your expectations for him in 2023? I think you can really speak to this because, Larry, you yourself have had to overcome, you know, some back injuries in the past.
I can very much relate to it. I had major back surgery 3.5 years ago, and I had virtually the same thing that Zalatoris had, and almost the same procedure that he had. And so after my surgery, I could not swing a golf club. I was not allowed to swing a club by my surgeon for 6 months after. Now, after 3 months, he let me putt a little bit, and then after another month, chip some. And as far as full shots, it was 6 months. So a lot of rust accumulates during that time. And so I think Zalatoris is going to have a period of shaking the rust off. I don't think you're going to see outstanding performances right off the bat, but I do think that once he gets his groove back, I think, you know, he's such a talent, and he's got such a great golf swing. It's so conducive to accuracy because it's so upright. It stays on that target line so long. I think you're going to see him, like I said, once he gets back in the rhythm and gets the rust off, I think he's going to, you know, just resume his role as one of the top young players on the tour. But it's going to take a while, I can tell you, because I went through it, and it takes a while to get the feel back.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with Larry Miller after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network. Right now, let's rejoin former PGA pro and author Larry Miller. Will Zalatoris, one of the younger guys, the fresh faces on tour that really made a charge in 2022 and the year before. So what do you appreciate the most about his game? What do you like about Will Zalatoris?
Well, he went to that long putter in that arm lock method and really improved his putting a great deal once he went to that method. And his, as I said before, his golf swing is very, very accurate. And it's accurate. You know, golf swings that are very upright, like Jack Nicklaus, you know, with those high hands, they tend to be very accurate players when you have an upright swing. And once again, it's because the golf club stays along the target line for a longer period than someone who has a flatter, more shallow swing. And so I think that's a big feature of his technique, and that's why he's so accurate. And then he's powerful. You know, he's a tall, thin guy.
Yeah.
He almost has the prototype perfect build for golf, for the golf swing. And so he's able to generate a lot of club head speed and along with his accuracy. So that's what makes him so good. And then you add to that his improved putting and his new style of putting, and that's why it's exactly why you kept seeing him at the top of the leaderboard.
2023, it is just around the corner. Who else do you have on the radar?
Well, I think Cameron Young is one player that has just really been knocking on the door repeatedly. And I think he's going to break through with some big, big performances. Scottie Scheffler showed in the last tournament, he showed that he still has it, you know, the game to be at the top. I think I mentioned on one of our shows that Scottie Scheffler depends really on his desire. You know, he got so good so fast and won so much. You know, how do you keep that fire going? But apparently he has, because that last week, you know, he almost won that golf tournament. So I think a big year from him, Cameron Young. And I think Jordan Spieth's going to bounce back with another really good year and start winning some more tournaments. Justin Thomas, boy, he's a mystery. He seems like he should win a lot more than he does, but he doesn't seem to close it out the way he should, unlike Tiger Woods, who was probably the best closer ever. So if Tiger got a lead in the fourth round, it was over. And JT hasn't displayed that yet. He's had a lot of faltering in the last rounds. And of course, Rory, you know, we don't even have to guess about that. He's going to have a great year. He's just too good. I think he's the best player in golf right now. And so those guys, I think you're going to see those names up there all the time. And then of course, every week you're going to have a group of young up-and-coming players who are going to be up there too, because as we've said many times, there's so many of them and they're so good that it just has to happen every week.
That has been Larry Miller, who joins us each and every week at Sports Map Radio Network. Enjoy the rest of this weekend and this beautiful weather. And, of course, the match that will get underway tonight at 6 o'clock Eastern Time at the Pelican Golf Club. Tiger, Rory, and Jordan, and JT. Larry, you take care. We'll talk here next week.
Okay, great. All right. Enjoy the warm weather while it lasts.
That, of course, was Larry Miller, who joins us each and every week at Sports Map Radio Network. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. So long, everybody. Don't drink and drive.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.